Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everybody. This is Renee. Welcome back to Renee's Heart to Heart. I want to thank everybody for being so patient about last week. Speaking of patience, my life seems to be full of them right now. My husband and my son are both going through kind of a big ordeal with their health issues, which prompted me for tonight's show. So I've kind of I've put some notes together that I'd like to read, and then I'll open up the lines, and hopefully this will, you know, help a few of you, because I suspect that most of us go through the same things, different people, different scenarios, but ultimately they're the same thing. I was only 16. Pardon me. I was only 16 when I had my first taste of the medical mess. My seven-month-old sister was sick for a week with what our family doctor called strep throat and/or tonsillitis. After a week on antibiotics, I checked on her. She was sleeping in her crib, and I found her having convulsions. I had seen them before, so I screamed for my mom, who picked her up and ran out the door to the hospital with my dad in the driver's seat. Several hours later, they returned to tell me and my younger siblings that she had spinal meningitis. This, of course, meant nothing to us except that our baby sister was left at the hospital. The next day, the lady across the street, who was a nurse, this is in a small rural area here in Florida, boarded up all of her windows and put petitions out saying that there was a member of our family that had spinal meningitis and it had been known to wipe out families. So my parents had to contend with that as well. As we found out later, spinal meningitis, as a side note, has like four different types or four different strains, if you will. And there are a couple of the strains that are incredibly contagious. And back in this time, in this era, it was true. There were some strains of it that had wiped out whole families. But this is how we were met with this. So she was there for 10 days and died the day she turned 7 months old. It was awful. Some days she was so swollen that her little head would be all misshaped. After her death, the hospital did an autopsy. Did that mean they didn't know what had happened? The exam revealed that she had swallowed a small safety pin. This was in 1964, very long time ago. So my parents got to live with and believe her death might have been their fault. You can imagine that. And then learning that all the responsibility that had rested with the hospital was no longer in question. That's interesting as well. Today, they may have even been accused of neglect, I suppose. But I've often wondered how a safety pin could have caused all that, not to mention her demise. My experience with the medical mess has been an interesting one. In 1983, our son was hit by a car. He was 13 years old. He was in a coma for 10 days due to brain trauma. When he woke up, we were so grateful and relieved and happy. All we could think about was the fact that he came out of the coma, which meant the brain trauma had subsided. Your body shuts down and goes into a coma if any part of your brain, the actual brain, the cerebellum, and the whole parts of your brain, touch any part of your skull. Your body has the ability to shut down so that your brain can rest until it untraumatizes. So he woke up. Then after 2 days, he couldn't breathe because the intubation tube was too big for a 13-year-old to have down his throat for so long, and they never did a tracheotomy because they really didn't think he was going to survive, so they left him intubated. And his throat got so scarred that it was closing up. He couldn't breathe at all. When the doctor did an emergency tracheotomy, he said to me on his way into the operating room, he may not come out, you know. This was after I'd already been through what I'd been through, and this is what this man, who's supposed to be there to help me, said to me. Well, he did, thank you, God. However, it was 2 years before he could breathe without a tube, and that was 4 surgeries later. And some of those surgeries were cutting edge, by the way, and it didn't take the first 3 times. And he would wear a tube for 6 months, and they'd take it out, and his throat would close again. Finally, the 4th time, the 4th surgery worked. Today, in the year 2013, 30 years later, his throat is closing again. This time, he has to have open surgery, which means they have to cut open his throat to replace that section of his trachea. The only doctor that can actually do this procedure is 80 miles away in Miami. So, of course, that's where we went. This means several more specialists and imaging centers and a crash course in insurance policy coverage, as well as rules and protocol, which would drive the sanest person over the edge. And I have never claimed to be very sane. So thank God we all have each other to do this with. The doctor says he has a hole the size of a straw to breathe through. This was 2 weeks ago. He cannot have this surgery until July 31st. July 31st. So that means he's going to wait to the tune of about 7 weeks, breathing through an opening that's as large as a straw. In the meantime, if he has any allergic reactions to anything, he really struggles for breath. If he wakes up in the morning and the AC has wafted in some night-blooming jasmine or gardenia, this is Florida. We have all kinds of stuff in bloom. It's summertime. He really struggles for breath. But this is the only time both of these specialists can get together. Take a deep breath, no pun intended. So his wife gets to lay awake at night and listen to him breathe. Is it me, or should the doctors clear their schedules and do what only they can do? Of course, I'm his mom. What do I know? 30 years ago when this happened, they would not let him come to a big equipped hospital because we didn't have the insurance for it. So they said, sorry, no beds. They're going to let him die. When my insurance came through at my job, thank God I had a wonderful, wonderful boss, and I don't know what kind of strings he pulled, but he got me insurance for something that was halfway existing but not existing, if you know what I mean. So my insurance would take care of some of the next few months. So they found a bed. That's bureaucracy at its finest. To be accepted at a county hospital without insurance, you must reside in that county. Next is the saga of getting sick at the age of 68 for the very first time, believe it or not. So many doctors, one for each part of the body, so many tests and scans, so many different kinds of medications. After more than a year of constant appointments, blood tests, scans, and x-rays, a tech says to my husband, did you know you have an aneurysm? No, not even really sure I know what that is. First time he went without me to a doctor's visit because I was busy with somebody else, and this is what the technologist says to him. They never are supposed to say anything, but this tech thought it was his job to inform my husband that he has an aneurysm. So he comes home and says, Reen, what's an aneurysm? I said, what's what? Who told you that? The guy who did the scan. So how is it after all the angios, there have been 3, all the other scans, lost count of how many there have been, all the cardiograms, no one saw a 7-centimeter aneurysm on his aorta? Okay, let that go. Take another deep breath. What next? 3 more new doctors. Can't read these scans. Copay for these scans. these CAT scans and MRIs and all that is to the tune of $109, folks. $109. Oh, no problems. Get another. Wonder why Medicare and Medicaid is in so much trouble. Poor president, he'll get blamed for this as well. This new surgery cannot take place until a special stent is custom made to fit into my husband's aorta and seal off the aneurysm. We have to do this, otherwise it could burst, and then it's all over. The fat lady has sung. When is this event, you ask? August 5th. What can I say that we all have not said already? So many wonderful men and women who dedicate their lives to the lives of others, and yet it's really not quite right, is it? Really isn't. I do have an amazing story about a boy whose life was saved by these kind of people who are dedicated and driven to learn the answers. We've come so far and learned so much, most miles over my head. But in that journey to discovery, the sense that we tend to forget is common. Be aware and always ask questions. Do not let any kind of misguided admiration blind you to the fact that all men and women were created equal and as such subject to mistakes. Be aware so you and yours are not one of them. I could go on with a lot more stories, maybe another show. Suffice to say, be aware of your own stuff. It's your responsibility in the end, and you are the only one who can accept it. So, as I said, that is a very, very condensed version of all the things that have been happening over the last year. My husband had heart failure last May, and that's what brought on all of this. Prior to that, he has been very healthy. He will be 70 in September. I will be 65. I thank God for my years in a very holistic community. Even though I am chronically overweight, I'm very healthy, knock on wood. And prior to this happening to him, neither one of us have ever taken blood pressure medicine or cholesterol medicine or any of those things. So the point is here, a very favorite saying that I'm really not positive who said it, but the first time I heard it was in my position that I retired from at Hippocrates Health Institute. And one of my favorite team members said, if you don't take care of your body, where are you going to live? So I guess if there are words of wisdom that come out of this whole conversation, and the most important things I can say to all of you is to not get yourself into that position to begin with. Take care of yourself. And a part of taking care of yourself is not just what you take in to nourish yourself, such as food and drink, etc., but also the words that you take in. It's not unusual to find out somebody gets incredibly ill because they absorb unkind things that are said to them, unkind deeds that are done to them. This is very prevalent. Having spoken and listened to so many people in my lifetime, I know this for a fact, that in many cases, people take in way too much stuff that they shouldn't have to absorb. So one of the things we talk about on this show is kindness to one another. You know, remember the old Bambi movie and the mommy rabbit saying to Thumper, the little boy rabbit, if you can't say something nice, don't say anything at all? Well, do that for each other. Please, because you have no idea what kind of trauma you can cause in someone's entire person by saying mean things to them. The other part of this show, besides reminding you all of those important facts, is I would like to talk, if anybody has any information, about following the procedures when you do get sick, and who you should talk to, and how many doctors you think you should bring in, and how many things you think you should get involved in, and who you can go to for help. There are few hospital advocates for patients, not enough. I actually wrote a letter to one of the hospitals that's smaller, that's in the vicinity, and asked them, but I don't have any medical background. I would love to be a patient's advocate, just to support them and ask questions, because I quite honestly don't know how some people walk in to a hospital scenario or a heavy-duty doctor scenario where you are given to your primary care physician and then farmed out to 6 or 7 other specialists. I watch some of the elderly people that come into the cardiac doctor's office, and I actually went into his office last week and said, I need to talk to you. And he said, what's the matter? And I told him, I said, you know, you need a new office manager, and if you like, I would volunteer to do it, to make your staff understand that the people that come in there are the most important people. Very sadly, they get caught up in paperwork, answering the phones. They sometimes don't even acknowledge some poor, sweet little old woman that's standing there on a walker with nobody with her. And they don't even say hello, I'll be with you in just a minute, or go sit down, or anything. She just stands there and waits until somebody's kind enough to speak to her. So if we have input, let's hear it. Of course, you know me, I'm willing to talk about anything. I do have a caller. It looks like it's from the New York area. I have a feeling it might be somebody that I know quite well, so I'm going to bring them in. Hi, this is Renee. Welcome to Renee's Heart to Heart. Hello?
Hey, Renee?
Yes?
Can you hear me?
I can. Are you on a New York phone?
No. You've been breaking up the whole time I've been listening to the show. I'm only hearing about three words out of four. Like the fourth word is always dropping off.
Well, that's funny because I have another phone number. Call back in, Shelley, because there's another one on here, so they may have split lines or something.
Okay, I'm going to call right back.
All right. If someone else is out there from a 212 number, please just call in again, and let's see if we can straighten this out. Because now it shows me the 212 number has dropped, and Shelley's number, which is a 561 number, never showed. 212 is back. I'm going to see.
Are you serious?
Hello?
I'm coming in with a different phone number?
Yes, you're coming in with 212. So I don't know what's
good.
So are you on your regular cell phone?
Yeah, the only one I have.
Well, that's pretty strange.
I'm telling you, I've been having problems talking to my sister all day. When I was talking to her, that's very interesting. I write that number down for me so I can call Sprint with it. Because when I was talking to my sister this morning, we kept hearing other people on the phone with us like we were on a conference call, which was the most bizarre thing.
I was kind of expecting a call from New York. So when I saw it come up, I thought that was this person. And and I wondered why you weren't on my board yet. So that's very strange. So it showed you, it shows me the dropped call is a 212 number, and then you dialed in again and came on, and it's still a 212 number.
Wow. No, it's definitely me.
Yeah. So were you able to hear most of the stuff that I shared with everyone?
I could tell what you were saying, yeah. I'm just saying that a bunch of the words kept dropping off, but I knew what you were saying. So,
okay.
So I was able to keep up with everything.
Okay.
You know,
okay.
And can you hear me clearly? Am I coming across okay?
Yeah, I hear static on the line, but I can hear your voice all right. If anybody's
okay.
out there and's listening and has any suggestions or usually when I try to call into the help station when I'm on the middle of a show, it doesn't usually allow me.
Right.
So I don't know what else to do other than just try to get through this conversation and see what happens with it. But so at any rate, you see where I'm coming from. And, of course, you a lot of this you are already aware of because you're a close family friend. So you know what's
right,
happened
and
the past year with Spike.
Yeah, and you know my history as well. I mean, one of the reasons I went the route I did to heal myself was because of a lot of the issues that I had with doctors, being misdiagnosed, being given medication that ended up ultimately not bringing about any health in my body. The two surgeries I did have didn't give me any relief. They actually made me worse. And, you know, so I went to the one surgery I had. They left me on an operating table for 5 hours unattended. I was freezing cold. They had my body on a, listen to this, on a OR recovery area on a metal table with no blankets. And I was so cold, I was actually shivering for 5 hours until somebody came over, until I was awake enough to make an audible sound. And they came mm-hmm. over, and I was shivering. And because my muscles were shivering for so many hours, I actually rotated the discs in my lower back 4.5 degrees. I could have been for 6 months. Mm-hmm. I had to go and get treatments on my back to rotate the discs the other direction, because I was in such pain I couldn't walk normally. And they were able to rotate them back about 3 feet. But my pelvic area is still off a degree and a half, which doesn't sound like a lot. It makes a big difference in the balance of the spinal, of your column. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
So I experienced stuff like that, which is just utter negligence. I've also seen, like you said, I mean, in any other walk of life, I've seen some of the most talented, caring people. I've seen surgeons that just did miraculous reconstructions on people that were injured or had accidents and lost a part of their body, and they were able to reattach it, and you wouldn't even know that the accident ever happened. They did such a beautiful job of reconstruction and things like that. And then I've seen other cases where these people are in professions they should not be in because they don't care. It's just they're just going in there to get their 8 hours or 12 hours or whatever in, but how they lost any human compassion. And they're not active, and they have people that are suffering, and they don't, I mean, a lot of the stories that I went through that with my mom when she was in the hospital, I swear, if I wasn't there, I don't know if I would have come out alive, because they mistreated her, they misdiagnosed her, they gave her the wrong one night. It was like I was down at the hospital almost every other day until she was out of there. She was there for 2 weeks. But I wasn't sure she was going to come out okay, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And my sister and I get on the phone with the doctor every other day, like, what is your staff doing? Do they know what they're doing?
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Well,
and,
I think that's the whole thing. I think that you must have, like I just mentioned, a patient's advocate is almost imperative. But the only trouble with the only patient advocates that I've ever met, and that's been in very big, very, very big hospitals, it's mostly, with all due respect, to cover the butt of the hospital. It's not really and truly about the welfare of the patient. It's about finding out if somebody's upset so some quick legwork can be accomplished so that person isn't upset anymore. More than it is really being an advocate.
You've all heard stories on the news about people that go in for, after it's an unpleasant subject, but, you know, we've all heard these stories about people that have gone into that and the wrong foot or the wrong leg or something like that. That almost happened to my brother. He went in to have two toes removed. He had a diabetic infection, which he has since then healed himself of the diabetes, but at that it was very much out of control, and he had gangrene starting in his foot. But the worst area with these two toes. So they were going to remove the two toes. Well, he's already sedated, getting ready to go into the room, and my sister saw them making a line on his leg by his knee. And they were prepping him for a leg amputation instead of toes. And obviously she was there, and she went a little hysterical, and she was to stop it. But what if she hadn't been there?
That's it.
And what if
That's
she hadn't,
exactly the truth.
You know, and what if
yep.
she hadn't been, what if she hadn't, why are you drawing a line there? You know, it's like, you know, it didn't sit well with us. Like, what's going on here? But people go in and don't have somebody like that there. So, you know.
Well, and I think sometimes even when they do, somebody is afraid that they're going to sound stupid. And I'm sorry, but better sounding stupid than than, you know, losing somebody. And I think if you're not a trained medical employee, whether a nurse or even a nursing assistant, and now you've got so many doctor's assistants who are just a step away from being a nurse and a step away from being a doctor someplace there in, I guess we'll call it limbo. And they, you know, they make calls a lot of times and are given carte blanche to say things, and they're not always trained well enough to be able to do that. So if something is going on and you're like thinking to yourself, well, maybe you've been there before, maybe you know somebody else who's been there before, you have to be able to say something. Very strange, Shelley. I have another 212, same number. I'm going to see who that is and open up that line.
That's
so funny. Hello? This is Renee.
Hi, Renee. It's Daniel. How are you?
Oh, my gosh. Now, I'm great, dear. How are you? I'm having a very strange thing happening tonight with the show, though, because every phone number that's coming up is coming from New York.
Oh, wow. Well, I'm calling from New York. No, I'm just joking. It's funny. Well, you got to call a show to get that fixed. I was listening to the program, and something interesting. The Florida legislature, in 2012, freshman Democrats that came into the House, new elected officials. There was a bill that was proposed by Walgreens they tried to screw around with the newly elected officials, the freshman legislators, because some of them are not educated on some of these issues. And what Walgreens was, they had one pharmacist originally that has three pharmacy technicians. And now anybody can be a pharmacy technician.
Right.
You pay the fee, you do the course, blah, blah, blah. $10 an hour. Great job. But the bill brought up by Walgreens called that now one pharmacist, which is six pharmacy technicians. So Walgreens can spend the money on paying a pharmacist. And imagine that these are just pharmacy technicians that are not trained. Imagine giving the example that was given to us by a state legislator was that you can give me Xantax or something and I go poof, I'm gone. These individuals are not trained appropriately. So talking about things that are not, or medical professionals that are not only one are trying to save money, but also are saying things. And maybe we always hear the stuff about doctors who do a surgery. Well, one of their, the stuff they use to cut you open inside you after the surgery.
We've all heard those horror stories. Well, I think though that a big part of the problem myself, having gone through what I've been through the past year with my husband and my history with family members, is that everybody has been given a specific job, and instead of there being what I call a general manager, who knows a little bit about all of your jobs, to oversee and make sure that everybody is playing well together and is cohesive with each other, that is non-existent, and that's where the problem lies. So if I ask the doctor that's supposed to be our primary care physician for my husband, whose
right.
business card says a myriad of things about what he is and what he does, I can't say
right.
to him, what do you think about my husband's lungs? Well, you'll have to go see the pulmonary doctor to get him to answer that. Well, you did the test, and you know what his heart is doing right now.
Right.
Yes, his heart is better. His heart is better. And so what does that mean exactly? Well, I'm in charge of internal medicine. Well, the last time I looked, his heart was inside, which means internal, right? Am I right or wrong about that? So, yes, his heart is inside. And, yes, I'm the one who did the cardiogram. And, yes, but in order to get any real answers about his heart, you have to go to the cardiac doctor, the cardiologist.
Right.
And then when the cardiologist
right.
checks him out and says, well, you know, how are you breathing? Well, you know, if I run up and down the stairs, I'm almost 70, I'm out of breath. Okay, well, we better take you to the pulmonologist. And that's how it snowballs. But in the meantime, you're thinking, because this is the way our brains work, that all these doctors have got like an internet on the inside, and they're keeping track with each other because of the wonderful innovation called computers.
Okay.
So say you're
right.
the pulmonologist, Shelley's the cardiologist, and I'm the internist. I just saw Mr. Brewer today, and I put everything in my computer. Now, Mr. Brewer is going to see you at the end of this week. So in my mind, I figured you got on the computer, pulled up Mr. Brewer's name because you know he's going to be your patient, and you got all that information. No, it doesn't work like that. What ends up happening is you have to ask Mr. Brewer all these questions, and he has to have all this information for him. So if you're smart and you're seeing all these doctors, you go around continuously with all your paperwork, a list of your medications, a list of all the tests you've had done, and CDs if they gave you them, and you give them to each doctor. Now, how many 70-year-olds do you know that would be able to keep that much organized and would even know to do that? Do you know any? Have I lost both of you guys?
I'm still here.
Okay, but you weren't coming up to me. Now you are.
Okay.
Say something again. Okay. Yeah.
I
lost Daniel though. No, I lost him. His call got dropped. So, but you see what I'm saying, and that's really what has to happen. And
of course.
The other day when we got sent from one doctor to another doctor to another doctor to the hospital, out of the hospital back to the first doctor, the second doctor, and then to another city in Florida to see another doctor, each doctor asked me the same questions, and any paperwork I didn't have, we had to sit for I don't know how long and wait for them to get facts from the other office, and that was if somebody called or if somebody answered the phone. So now I have this big portfolio that I carry everywhere with me that's got all this stuff on it.
Well,
but would Bonnie know how to do that without you, Shel?
Of course. Of course not. Absolutely not. My mom's
right.
only 76, not stupid. But no, she would absolutely not be able to do all that. She would be absolutely
mm-hmm.
overwhelmed by it. You know?
Mm-hmm.
And the whole thing is that, you know, and I'm not going to go into great detail tonight. I literally talk for hours on the subject. But part of the issue is, in addition to doctors not communicating with each other, the problem with specialists is they're not looking at whole body healing. They're looking at an isolated area where a symptom is. And sometimes a heart symptom is not by the heart, it's caused by the endocrine system. It's caused by something. My particular heart condition is aggravated when I eat something that I'm sensitive to. I don't have allergies that throw me into anaphylaxis, but I do have allergies that are enough that sometimes when I eat something that I'm sensitive to, you know, that it can actually make my heart race or change my blood pressure or something. amount of time. You know, so that's something that I've experienced before. But when they just look at the heart like it's not connected to everything else, body, or they look at the internal organs of the digestive tract, or they look at this, or they look at, and they don't look at it in connection to the rest of the body, you're not getting appropriate diagnosis. That's one of the things wrong with Western medicine. When you look at Chinese medicine and the type of medicine they practice in Japan, they do whole lot. You don't specialist. You go to a doctor that assesses you from head to toe, and what they do is they treat the whole person. Because if you're having heart symptoms, there's things going on in the body that are either precipitating that particular condition or that are preventing it from healing. And once you assess, you correct everything all at once, and the entire physiology heals. The doctors in Japan don't get paid unless the patient recovers. Do you think what happened in the United States?
Is that right?
That's right. Did you also know Japanese are number one in longevity and health in the world, and the United States somewhere down around 38. I think we're under Bolivia and Cuba, for God's sake. You know, with all our science, with all of our medicine, yet the FDA and a lot of the government agencies reject Chinese medicine. But look at the culture; they are so massively healthy. It's been proven for thousands of years that these techniques, but why doesn't Western medicine embrace this more? Why? You know why? Because it's not as lucrative. Pharmaceutical medications, unfortunately, that they charge $100 for a bottle of, if they had that whole thing on 60 Minutes or Highline, one of those expose shows about a year ago, and they showed that these bottles that they're charging these exorbitant amounts of money for cost them like $1.50 or $2 to make. They're making everybody.
Oh yeah, A few years ago, somebody sent me an entire list of all of that. What an actual, especially antibiotics, what they really cost the pharmaceutical companies to make. It's like to the tune of like $2, $1.75, things like that. Some of the last prescription that they ask us to get for my husband was $400 a month.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah. And
now prices are coming out that low cholesterol medication is now being used to Alzheimer's and Parkinson's because the brain, first of all, up until, I remember what year it was, but up until a year, I'd have to go back, I don't remember it now, but it was in one of the books I read, cholesterol at 250 was actually considered fine and healthy. And then when Lipitor was developed and they found that they could drive it down, they lowered what healthy cholesterol was. All right? Cholesterol too low, the body loses the ability to regenerate. And when you're talking about brain tissue, the brain neurons of our body has like a myelin sheath on it. The myelin sheath is made out of cholesterol. When you have a diet that's too low in cholesterol, the myelin sheaths don't repair anymore. They lose that coating, and then you have a reduced connectivity between the neurons in the brain. I mean, I'm kind of giving a layman's explanation, but it went into much more detail in the articles that I was reading. But I heard this now from four different sources. It started out, I heard it from one doctor. And I heard it from John Gray, who is, you know, the author of Men Are From Mars, Venus. He actually talks about this study in one of his latest books. And now I've heard it from two doctors who did these expose articles that are on the internet. And it's like the whole cholesterol thing is a farce. It's just a way to make money, and they're injuring at the same time. I don't understand why the FDA allows this kind of stuff. It's nonsense. While we're injuring people. Your cholesterol is not good if it's too low, because in order for the body to repair itself, we need a certain amount of cholesterol. All cells are made from cholesterol, and when you lose the sheath lining in the brain, that's one of the causes of Alzheimer's. You know that Alzheimer's didn't even exist like 40 years ago, before we had low cholesterol medication. Alzheimer's didn't
exist
before that.
You and I might have to have an argument about that one. Not tonight, but I think a lot of those things that they say didn't exist, there was simply no diagnosis for. Plus that you have to remember that our longevity and all that stuff has changed radically. So I don't know about that. I remember being with my grandmother in senior citizen homes where she was in her 60s and she would take care of elderly people, and she was in pretty tough shape. And I mean that in a good way, tough shape, strong, you know. But these people would be not just senile, they would be totally lost, Shelley. They didn't know who they were, where they were, how old they were, what they were supposed to be doing. So I don't know. I would not call myself knowledgeable about that. I'm just speaking from personal experience in what I have seen. So I don't know. I agree with everything else that you've just said as far as some of the causes for the rapid incline of all of these kind of illnesses, absolutely, and the things that you and I learned at Hippocrates that stay with us because they were right on. We know they were right, and we've seen them. But I also believe that in a lot of cases, a lot of this stuff has been around forever. But again, longevity wasn't reached. There was a lot of stuff that didn't come to any kind of fruition. So to be able to know how many people, say 40 years ago, would have developed Alzheimer's, the average age, that's why Social Security is 65. That meant you only had a couple years left to live on your Social Security. So if you only had a little bit accumulated, you're probably going to be all right. So now it's different, though. Now, hence all the commercials on TV trying to figure out how to make everybody's money last longer. And how many people do you and I know over the age of 65 that still work a full week? We know quite a few, don't we?
Yes, quite a few.
Mm-hmm.
Yep, it's very commonplace now.
Yep, and since I am turning 65, I've also learned I met a charming gentleman today that I hope is going to talk on the show because I think his knowledge will be very beneficial. And he's like 70 and he helps people with their Medicare Part B and C and D and all that kind of stuff that you also have to get a college education to understand. And he's been lovely. He's been calling me and you know, telling me what is available to me and things like that. That's something else. The law forbids them to try to solicit you. So all they can do is call you and give you a little bit of information without harassing you about this. Why is that a law? Where did that even come from?
Law that against what? Against what type of soliciting?
They can't solicit you for additional insurance after you are collecting Medicare. They can't solicit you to go to their company to get additional insurance to cover copays and copays for prescriptions and stuff like that. They're not allowed to solicit you.
Huh. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I wonder why. That doesn't make sense to me.
Well, it's, they can alert you to the fact that they're available, but they can't really hard sell you or solicit you. Yeah. And then you have a certain amount of time between your 64th birthday and your 65th birthday. I don't know what the time is. That's why I wanted Barry to come on the show. I said, I'm sure you're going to give a lot of information, whatever you're allowed to give, without soliciting, to enlighten
right.
people.
Now, where does he work? I missed that part. Where does he?
He works for himself, and he just helps people figure out, you know, what they're supposed to be doing. You know, because like when you get Medicare, I've been collecting Social Security since I'm 62. So when I get my Medicare part of my Social Security, they take part of my Social Security on a monthly basis to help pay for that Medicare. But it only pays for you know, it doesn't pay the copays. There's always copays. There's this and there's that. And a scan, which I read on my paperwork tonight, in one of these imaging centers, the copay is $110.
Wow.
So it's usually like 10 to 20% of whatever the cost of the procedure is.
Right.
But even the copays for prescriptions, even if you get generic prescriptions, it's nothing for one of our senior citizens to be paying to the tune of $300 and $400 extra a month, which is a pretty good lump sum for some of them. That's what they used to pay for their mortgage payments.
Right.
You know, that's what they're paying to pay the copay on their scripts. So it isn't easy, and it isn't it was not built to cover our longevity today. And the fact that so many of us are still out there and even having things like car accidents and or falling down because we're water skiing or, you know, in our 60s. And those people have to be covered too. Used to be all they had to worry about was, you know, heart medicine and stuff like that when you got to be over 60 and they put you on a prescription or something that you took the rest of your life or a cholesterol pill or something. Now it's much bigger than that. But the point is, and the point that I wanted to really put across to everybody tonight is you have to get knowledgeable and you have to ask questions. Don't blindly do what somebody tells you to do. The one part of the paperwork that I wrote for tonight, I mean so much. It's everything as far as I'm concerned. And if you cannot embrace this, you're going to be in trouble out there. Be aware and always ask questions. Do not let any kind of misguided admiration blind you to the fact that all men and women were created equal and as such are subject to mistakes. Be aware so you and yours are not one of them. You have to be. It doesn't make them bad people. It makes them us. They're the same as us, and they're going through the same things you are. But if you don't ever ask, how in the hell are you ever going to know?
Right.
If you don't ask somebody a question,
yourself.
They assume you know it.
I mean, we're living in the information age. Even elderly people know how to get on the Internet and Google. If you're being given a recommendation to do something, Google it. See what kind of pros and cons you see out there. You might read some will lead you down a different path or to a different remedy. You know, doctors have the tendency to give you a singular option like it's the only one that's available. I was told that I needed
You needed surgery. I just saw Shelley again. Let me see if she comes back on if I do this. Are you there, Shell? Well, this is a very strange night for cell phones and for communications, evidently. The phone number on my board has never changed, telling me that Shelley's calling me from New York City. So let me say this. If you do have something going on and you're scared and you don't have anybody who can be your ombudsman or your advocate when you go someplace to a doctor, then do what Shelley just said, research. Get on Google, look up what they said you've had, see what the treatment is. There's several different sites where you can research it. And getting into a computer and going on Google doesn't take any real expertise. You don't need to know, you know, how to move something from one place to another or copy and paste or send something to your other account or do anything. Don't be intimidated. Just get on Google or any of the search engines and see, look up whatever the doctors have diagnosed you with or whatever they've told you about and research it. I've done that every time I've gone with my husband to the doctors because I needed to really understand completely so that my questions were not ones that the doctor would look at me and say, you know, I don't know what you're talking about. So, again, most doctors, most nurses, most people in the medical field chose that for a reason. And they want to be who they need to be. A lot of the problem today is all because of all the paperwork that has been established for people that cannot get to the real care part of a patient or somebody that they're taking responsibility for. Hospital stays are god-awful scary. If you don't have a family member with you, it can be an awful experience. Again, the nurses are some of the most amazing people I've ever met in my whole life. And yet, today, if you're in the hospital, every nurse walks around with an iPad or a mini laptop, something, so that she can, every time she walks into somebody's room, she's got to say what she went in there. There has to be total accountability for these people. And everybody does the same thing. In a doctor's office, it's the same thing. Everything has to be put on 3 or 4 different computers when you go into a doctor's office today. It's gotten so bogged down by paperwork that there's very little one-on-one with the poor person that's standing in front of them or sitting in front of them who's scared to death because they've just realized something is going wrong with them and they don't know what to do about it. So they've turned to the only person or persons that they think will have the answers. And that's the medical field. All my years at Hippocrates, I would hear such horror stories about doctors. But the fact of the matter is, the perfect scenario would be to have doctors and lifestyle function together. If we could make that happen, it would be possible. I'm not sure it would be the only answer, but it would make it possible for one to help the other. Because without one, the other one isn't perfect by any stretch of the imagination. Do I have you back, Shelley?
Yeah, I don't know when I lost you because I'm talking.
No, I lost you quite a while ago.
Oh well, I didn't know.
You were still on my board, but we couldn't hear you at all. And then when it came up that the call had, when it came up and the call had dropped, then a couple minutes later, then it showed me that you were on again.
Am I still coming up as a 212 number?
Yes, you are. Mm-hmm.
Really?
So I think what really might be happening is we're in the Twilight Zone. And this is your Twilight Zone saga, and I'm stuck in it.
Yeah. Well, that would explain a lot of what's been going on with these men.
I think it's very, very possible.
Very possible, yeah. Wow, that's funny. I've had that
kind of day, so. Well, then that might be it, because my day has been, we had the wonderful, wonderful, fun birthday party this weekend. It was so good to see all of my adult kids' friends. There were many of them here. We had to listen to a rendition of On the Cover of the Rolling Stone by a bunch of men who can't sing. Hopefully we'll never try to sing for a living, but certainly had a good time trying it. And lots of little people swimming and playing games. They played horseshoes. They played some game where you throw these like bean bags into a hole in a deck. I can't even remember what the name of it was, but they were playing that game, and more food than anybody could possibly imagine, as usual. And then in the evening, we did a bonfire, and all the kids made s'mores and roasted marshmallows, and swam, stayed wet all day because it was an incredibly hot day, and not 1 ounce of rain, which was shocking. And so it was great fun, and I think it was a good opportunity, because Mike is kind of worried about what's going to happen to him in a month. And, of course, Big Spike, it was even good for him because he watched all these kids grow up as well. And then the younger kids, they brought a few of their friends, but not too many. Things aren't like they used to be. Kids didn't make big neighborhood gangs of friends. I mean, that's what they used to do, make big neighborhood gangs of friends that are still in touch. I see my grandchildren don't have a lot of that. They have a couple friends in school. They mostly stick to family, my grandkids. So there weren't a lot of the really younger kids here. So, but it was a lot of fun, and of course I cleaned from dawn until dusk yesterday. But everything's back in order now, and it was great fun, and I think it was good for everybody to see everybody and to be happy, and that's always a heart lightener, and indeed it was. So,
right.
I think that if my husband's stent can be customized and delivered before August 5th, he will do his surgery earlier. So far, and I've been doing a lot of the corresponding with Miami, so far there is no hope that Mike's surgery will be before July 31st. So both of them are very serious surgeries, and, you know, but you know us,
right.
We're taking it very lighthearted. But because of everything that's taken place during these episodes, I actually worry about everybody else, is the truth.
Yep.
I worry about
yep.
people that are all by themselves. And if you are, you have to. Go ahead, honey.
Well, you know, one of the things you just said as I was coming back in, it was wholeheartedly, because there are times when you do medical solutions, when you do need surgery, and I believe there's only a very, very few occasions that are beneficial. I think probably well over 90% of the medications that are out there are not useful because they're creating somatic symptoms and not create the underlying cause of the symptom, and that's dangerous. You know, but I do believe that there are some medications that do help body heal and to help put somebody in a place where they can heal by reducing pain or something like that. You know, so I do see the benefit of some medications, but I think the vast majority of them are not required. And it would be wonderful if you had, instead of hospitals, if you had health centers that married Western, the best qualities of Western medicine with the best qualities of Eastern therapies and healing modalities so that people could literally get the benefit of both. I had gone down to Miami. I don't know if you remember this, working at Hippocrates. I went with the therapy director at the time down to the Miami hospital, and the doctors were holding a symposium of holistic alternative medicine, and the director of the research center was talking to all of us, and he said that this is the wave of the future. There are still a lot of medical centers and doctors that are being resistant to the idea. He said that anybody that is truly on the cutting edge of medicine realizes that we cannot move forward until Western medicine is married with, and this is what this doctor said, is married with Eastern philosophies, because neither one of them is complete. And he has seen his own where he's tried to do things for patients and they only healed so far, didn't get any better. They went and they tried something that was of holistic in nature and then healed completely. And it was the combination of both that brought that about. So that really is the wave of the future, and the more and more people that look to that, that educate themselves in that area, we will move forward in a positive way for generations to come. And then the advice for generations that are here now is like, to try to make sure that you have people around you that are looking out for you. When you're in a hospital and you're going to be incapacitated, make sure you have friends or family members that are keeping around the doctors and the nurses, and just, you know, you don't have to be obnoxious about it, but there and let them know that you're aware.
Well, you have to be aware. That's right. You have to be aware, and you have to, like I told everybody when, I don't know whether you heard this, but I told everybody Googling is very simple. There's nothing to intimidate you. But we're almost out of time. We will, I'm sure we'll end up talking about this again in the weeks to come because I'm immersed in it, so it'll be on my mind all the time. But I want to thank everybody. Thanks, Shell. Now that you're in New York City, let me know how the weather is there.
Got it, babe.
And yep. And thanks, Danny. When you get back to New York. Yeah, I know. Yeah. Oh, imagine that. All right. So good night, everybody. From my heart to yours, this is Renee. Good night and God bless. Night, Shell. Talk to you tomorrow.